This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
For some, Israel's war against Iran was an example of martial precision that will result in military textbooks being rewritten. For others, it has been interpreted as a failure for not completely destroying the nuclear facilities in Iran and allowing a status quo to continue. I'm delighted to have Dr. David Brockatz, military expert, historian, author and research fellow at the Department of Military History at the Faculty of Military Science at Stellenbosch University as my guest now to explore the military aspect of this war. Dr. Katz, always look forward to talking to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
Dr. Katz, can we start off firstly at looking at the different military battles that Israel has been fighting in Gaza versus Iran?
Yes, look, it's very important. So Israel has been surrounded by what they call the Ring of Fire, right, which was a series of proxies set up by the Iranians, the Houthis, Hamas, and Hezbollah. And the Israelis have proceeded over the last few months, since October the 7th, 2023, in dismantling that Ring of Fire. And once it had nullified the Hezbollah quite effectively, and managed to subdue the Houthis and also Hamas, it was able then to deal with the Iranians, which were the head of the octopus, and which I believe that they've done quite effectively, certainly. In a remarkable operation.
So we're going to look at that operation, but just in terms of combat.
Yes.
In Gaza, it's almost on boots on the ground.
Yes.
It's almost, I don't want to use the word face-to-face because I don't know what the correct word is, but it's in the trenches.
Yeah, face-to-face is good. Yeah, sometimes it gets down to that. I mean, yeah. It's pretty nasty face-to-face it's warfare.
Can I say old-fashioned warfare in very difficult urban settings?
The most difficult,
so
yes.
The strategy needed for that,
yes,
is very different to the one that you would need for Iran.
Oh, yes, no, certainly. And the strategy they used against Hezbollah was also very different.
So they were
able to decapitate. So let's look at Hezbollah quickly. And
okay.
they were able to decapitate the leadership of Hezbollah, thereby rendering the ground troops almost ineffective because they had lost the leadership. And they were able to do that fantastically. I mean, that is something that will be read about in military textbooks for many, many years to come and studied. They have not been able to do the same with Gaza. They haven't had that intelligence penetration in Gaza, and they haven't effectively and quickly been able to decapitate the head as they did with Hezbollah. So it's a different war totally.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
Yes.
Israel is fighting different wars against different enemies, and
each different
kind of military strategy requires complete different doctrine.
Absolutely, and they've managed also, which is remarkable about them. This is an army that's managed to adopt and get used to urban warfare very, very quickly.
Right, urban warfare. I think that was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, which is the most difficult type of warfare,
exactly.
I must tell you. So they managed to avoid that with Hezbollah. It was everybody's fear that they were going to go in and face the same type of thing, you know, having to go into tunnels and fortified positions that have been fortified over many, many years, and embedded civilian population amongst the military. It was going to be, can I use the word, a balagan,
yeah,
the same balagan in Lebanon that it was going to be in the Gaza. And they managed to avoid that by decapitating the head very effectively because of the intelligence penetration. They seem not to be able to do it in Gaza because they didn't. Gaza is more or less like a homogenous population. And it's not the same in Iran and in Lebanon. It's not a homogenous population. So they were able to infiltrate intelligence into there. And Hezbollah didn't make itself liked amongst the whole population. So there were chinks in the Hezbollah armory that they were able to penetrate.
Well, it looks like intelligence has actually been the defining factor in Israel's attack against both Lebanon and Iran.
Yes.
And that intelligence was clearly lacking,
well,
not picked up on in Gaza.
Let's make ourselves unpopular and say there was an intelligence failure.
Yes.
In Gaza.
Correct.
So initially there was this intelligence failure, and some people would dispute that and say, no, it was the government's interpretation of the intelligence that they received. Whatever situation there was there, there seemed to have been an intelligence failure right at the outset of the campaign in the Gaza. That's the first thing.
Yes.
Secondly, what happened is that they were not able to replicate the same type of operation that they did against Hezbollah and Iran, using deep intelligence and managing to decapitate the head, which they did so successfully with Hezbollah and they did so successfully with the Iranians. That has not been able to be replicated in Gaza for whatever reason.
Okay, we're going to do, I think, Yemen last, but let's look at the campaign both in against Hezbollah and Iran. Okay. Should we do Iran first?
Because that's whatever you're more comfortable with.
Yeah. So Iran was, firstly, it was a surprise attack.
Yes.
I don't think many people knew about it.
No. Okay. No. So it was just a surprise attack on a couple of different levels. On a strategic level also, they were busy in the negotiations. It seemed like the Americans were in on the whole act,
sure,
and distracted them strategically by them being in negotiations. They were totally taken unaware. Which was quite an accomplishment for the Israelis to do. And not only that, but the Israelis over a period of time had smuggled in drone bases into Iran.
Can we just talk about that? Like, what does it take to smuggle in drone bases?
Well, it was actually, funnily enough, it happened in Ukraine. It happened in Russia with the Ukrainians. So the Ukrainians preempted it by a couple of weeks, which is quite interesting. And it shows you about rare area defense. It shows you that it's very, very necessary to have defense in depth in your country, and also local people conducting that defense, because they know who strangers are and who aren't strangers are. There's a whole doctrine behind that's very, very interesting and pertinent to every single country now, is that you have to defend your rear areas. And the best people to defend your rear areas are homegrown people that know who the neighbors are and whatever the situation is. So the Israelis were able to, and the Ukrainians.
How?
Well, they've had intelligence embedded in Iran, and also because the Iranian population is not completely behind the Iranian government, to say the least. So they were able to find sympathetic Iranians within Iran to give them information, and also to embed the intelligence operatives, some of them Israeli, obviously, some of them Iranian, and they were able to penetrate the whole intelligence system and find, obviously, a friendly local population that were able to facilitate in this whole operation. Can only be the answer.
Also, Iran has been developing nuclear facilities for at least 30 years, correct?
Yes.
But they also have... And again, I'm not a military expert, but big launching attack things, that missiles and different kinds of missiles, and long-range missiles.
And defensive missiles.
They have been, I mean, it was, it's quite a big tiger, the Iranian, or so it was thought, that they had a strong military.
Well, no, certainly they've been putting forward for many, many years, and the Israelis have seen it as a threat, is that their missile threat is something to be reckoned with. And we can see that in the Ukraine, because a lot of the missiles and drones that have been supplied to the Russians come from Iran. So Iran has got quite an industry behind manufacturing missiles and manufacturing drones. And I mean, obviously the big threat also is, once you've got these missiles that can go over thousands of kilometers, that you're going to put a dirty bomb or some type of a nuclear a warhead on these things. That's an existential threat to Israel. So certainly Iran has had this capability. So it hasn't been so strong in its air force and its ground forces. That's not where they concentrated their budget and their money. They put everything behind their missiles and supplying these missiles also to the proxies. And they had built up this ring of fire, and they weren't going to be the only ones that were going to fling missiles at Israel. They're going to use swarming tactics, and they were all going to fire, the Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Iranians all together, firing over thousands of missiles simultaneously. And this would have overwhelmed the Israeli shield, the Iron Dome system. So that was the idea behind it. And Israel was able to deal with these enemies one at a time, instead of them being able to simultaneously. That was quite cleverly done, I must tell you. Instead of them being able to simultaneously launch an attack which would overwhelm the Israelis. We've seen how much damage one or two of these missiles can do in a built-up area.
Well, I was going to say that the danger of these missiles were evident in the neighborhoods that Absolutely. Were affected, and the fear that Israelis must have been living because
this is a ton of high explosive. So you can imagine the destruction. We've seen the destruction, and you can just imagine if that was a biological weapon or a dirty bomb. Or it was, God forbid, a nuclear weapon. You can imagine the destruction that would have happened to Israel. So this was a real and very existential threat that they had, that they managed to take out.
Now, everybody was talking very early on the war, and it was only 12 days, about that Israel controlled the airspace. What does that mean? I mean, what are the implications of that for?
Well, they gained air superiority, which means that the Iranians weren't able to control the airspace over their own country, which means that the Israelis were able to roam that whole country from a massive distance. If you think about it, it's from here to Cape Town. So they would have to, these jet fighters would have to obviously fly and refuel, or they used extra fuel tanks. And they arrive over Iranian airspace, and the air defense systems had been nullified, and so had the Air Force, so they were able to roam freely over Iranian airspace and take out the targets, intelligence-driven targets, by the way, that were fundamental to their aim of destroying the Iranian military infrastructure and some of its economic infrastructure. It was absolutely remarkable. So it was first of all, overwhelming the Iranian defenses and the Iranian Air Force, which never flew, by the way, because they knew they were going to be in a hiding for nothing. But certainly they took out the missile system, the defensive missile systems. These are missile systems, by the way, that have been bought by the Turkish. These are Russian missile systems, and the Turkish have armed themselves with them. And everybody who's now, and the Chinese, and everybody who now has these missile systems is turning around thinking to himself, wow, you know, these were overwhelmed so quickly by the Israelis. Are they worth anything? So they need to go and rethink their whole defensive program in the light of what happened to Iran.
When we talk about what would have happened if America hadn't bombed the Iranian sites?
Well, I think
nuclear sites, I should say.
If the Israelis would have left it would have been a partial destruction of the Iranian nuclear infrastructure. The only option, and that would have been unacceptable. Would have been unacceptable. So the only option, and I think this was right up there in the plans. The only other option was, once they had gained air superiority, which they did pretty quickly, was to put boots on the ground via special forces. And they would have attacked these nuclear facilities via putting special forces down on the ground, which would have been an unbelievably dangerous operation, almost a suicide mission. If you think that they'd have to transport troops 1,500 kilometers over hostile territory, somehow land them on these sites, let them do the job, and then extract them. I mean, it would have been something. But I think they had a plan to do that. I think they must have.
In terms of hostile media saying that this attack was kind of because they'd run out of options in Gaza, would you agree with that at all?
No, absolutely not. So Israel was faced initially, let's say on October 7th, what were the Israelis faced with? They were faced with a ring of fire. That's what they were faced with. They were faced with these enemies surrounding them with hundreds and thousands of these missiles, with the threat that these countries would simultaneously attack the Israelis and overwhelm them. And they managed to stave off these enemies from making a simultaneous attack one by one. But they had to deal with the instigator of this whole thing, which was the Iranians. The Iranians had supplied all these proxies with these missiles, and had funded all these terrorist movements in these countries. And they had to be eliminated eventually. So that was their plan. So Iran was the fulfillment of the campaign.
I don't know if we're going to have time to go back to Hezbollah, but maybe we can talk about the Houthis, because those missiles are still being launched.
Yes.
Why? And what can Israel do about it?
Well, it's the tyranny of distance once again. I mean, there's a massive amount of distance between the Houthis and Israel. And the Houthis can carry on firing one or two missiles ever so often, and use interdiction just to bother the Israelis. And it's a very difficult problem to solve. You know, we're back again to the idea that you're going to have to get air superiority and try and bomb these people into submission. It's not an easy ask, but I believe that once the the head, which was the Iranians, have been decapitated and removed from the picture. And I think they've been pretty effectively removed at this stage of the game. That the power of the Houthis will whittle away. Eventually, these proxy powers will whittle away. If they're not resupplied with missiles and they're not funded to the extent that they were before, is that their power is going to dissipate.
So let's look at militarily what this means for the region. I mean, people are saying there seems to be like unclarity as to whether America did the job good enough in terms of destroying those nuclear sites. Can what is your take on that?
Well, I think they have done the job. If they haven't done the job, I don't think there's any reluctance on their part. They've shown it. They've demonstrated to go in again and do the job properly again. I do believe the Israelis have got deep embedded intelligence inside Iran. That is only improved over the last couple of weeks, and they will know firsthand if there's been a move now to revitalize the nuclear facilities. I'm not worried about that at all. I think this is posed with the removal of Iran as a regional power there. I think it's really put forward the possibility now of the Abraham Accords coming into effect, and other Arab nations wanting to come to peace with Israel. And my only problem is with Gaza. That's my problem. That seems to be an insoluble problem at the end of the day. I don't think the Israelis have got an end game there that I can understand.
Yeah.
They certainly haven't articulated an end game in Gaza, which is a pity, because it means that they lose the media war immediately. Because there doesn't seem to be, I don't understand where they're going to go with it, because it seems to be the elimination of Hamas is not going to be a very, very easy thing. So that is my caveat. But
yeah,
taking out Iran and removing them as a player has solved quite a few problems at the strategic level in that area.
I wish we had more time, because if we go back to Gaza, it does look like there are two completely different strategies that Israel could take. One is eliminate Hamas, and the other one is the hostages.
If it's possible, yeah.
And from what I understand, they can't do both. They can't focus on the hostages being returned and eliminate Hamas at the same time. So they have to make a decision, and I'm not sure what that kind of would look like.
Look, I don't quite know what's going on. Hamas seems to be pretty embedded in the population there. They've got a lot of support of the population. The last 2 years doesn't seem to have in any manner dissipated the support of the ordinary people sitting in Gaza for Hamas. It looks, unfortunately, like it might not be as a military power, but certainly unless there's an alternative that can be thought up or come up with that they're going to grab onto, it looks like Hamas or some type of a Hamas type of movement is there to stay. Unfortunately, I just don't see how they're going to eliminate Hamas totally. So it's an ongoing problem there. I just don't see the end game. We haven't been provided with a final great vision, you know, that the Israelis have for Gaza.
Final question: Iran being taken out to the extent that it has, will that not influence Hamas?
Oh
and
yes,
Gaza?
Absolutely. It weakens by taking out Iran. It weakens all these forces, all these proxies in the region. It augurs well for Israel. I think they're in a much better position now than they were 23 or 22 months ago, whatever
the
time is.
Yeah.
So they have managed to accomplish that, and I think there will be a movement now towards some type of a peace process with Saudi Arabia and some of the other Arab nations. So it's looking good on that front, but they need to solve the Gaza situation. That has to be solved. So yeah, that's the caveat.
On that note, thank you so much. Our time always
My
goes
pleasure.
So incredibly quickly together. So thanks so much for coming in, and I look forward to our next chat.
My pleasure.
That was Dr. David Brock-Katz, and military expert, historian, author, and research fellow at the Military Science Faculty at Stellenbosch University.